tonight's show is going to be a little bit different than most of the shows here. Mostly we review news events, but on this particular broadcast, I'd like to read you an interview. This is something that I'd originally been planning to do as part of a series on mind control, which eventually we're going to get into, perhaps here on One Step Beyond, certainly on Hard Rain, also heard here on KFJC. But I thought this evening I'd read you this particular interview because it's perhaps the best, at least if my instincts about what's going on in this country politically today are correct, and I have reason to suspect that they're at least somewhat accurate. This portrait here is one of the most accurate and chilling sort of portrayals of American political reality that I've ever seen. Now, in the course of this interview, repeating, once again, this interview is contained in a book called Operation Mind Control. It's authored by Walter H. Bauert, last name B-O-W-A-R-T. It's published in hardcover, well, by two books. One of them is called, one of the softcover editions is by Dell. It's copyrighted 1978, and there's another softcover edition whose title I forget it. The company begins with F, but the name escapes me offhand. At least one softcover edition is published by Dell, again, copyright 1978. Now, Bauert in Operation Mind Control refers to this assassin as the Patriotic Assassin, and that's the title of this chapter. And first thing that Bauert begins talking about here is the circumstances under which he came to meet this particular assassin. And he met this guy through a chemist who had apparently worked for what he calls the cryptocracy, that is the secret governmental apparatus which has been running this country for some time. And this chemist had worked on developing poisons, and it was through this chemist that he met this particular assassin. And this assassin, as I said, talks about a lot of things, mind control, American political reality, freedom versus dictatorship, and a lot of interesting things. First thing here is a description. First thing Bauert presents here in Operation Mind Control is a description, a brief description of this chemist, and then he gets into the section of the actual interview, again, with a U.S. government assassin here. And of the chemist, Bauert writes, "A chemist who had worked for one of the intelligence research labs, he developed new ways for killing quickly and quietly, and he had met several of the killers who were to use his formulas. Over a three-year period, I talked with this chemist on a number of occasions. He came to trust that I would reveal no names and endanger no lives in telling the story of mind control. After hearing details of my research, he offered to introduce me to a man he had met while working at the lab. This man had been a high-ranking officer in the military, retired after 30 years of service. He had served as an officer in World War II in Korea during the Vietnam conflict because of his special knowledge of black science," unquote. He was induced to sign on after he retired from military service as a private contractor for the cryptocracy. During the next 18 years, he accepted several simple assassination jobs. He told the chemist about some of his friends having come back from similar missions with holes in their memories," unquote. The chemist had arranged a meeting in a noisy public restaurant in a small New Mexico town. Having promised to take no notes, I had secreted in my pocket the smallest tape recorder made, which allowed me to record 3 hours of the assassin's talk amid clanking glasses and the general restaurant noise. When I finally sat across from him, my heart raced. The retired assassin was a 60-year-old man, gray-haired but as strong as a man 25 years his junior. He had a .357 Magnum revolver strapped to his side, as did the man he introduced to me as his bodyguard. As a cover for the guns, he and the bodyguard both wore National Rifle Association patches sewn prominently to the pockets of their crisply pressed khaki clothes. The chemist had already informed his friend about the book I was researching. As we sat down and were introduced by first names only, I told the assassin I was especially interested in finding out why men had returned to civilian life with amnesia. I mentioned the ad I had placed and the number of men who had responded. This, by the way, refers to an ad he placed in several papers around the country, basically asking people to come forward who had holes in their memories, and in so doing, Bauert discovered a huge number of military and intelligence veterans who had been subjected to mind control. So that's the ad he refers to here. Continuing with Bauert's account. I mentioned the ad I had placed and the number of men who had responded. I mentioned also that the majority of those who had responded and who had reason to believe their minds had been tampered with had been enlisted men. Career officers, he explained, were legally bound by security oaths and economically dependent upon pensions and the privileges of rank. But enlisted men, while perhaps bound by an oath, were likely to separate from the service knowing more than they needed to know. Somebody had to man the high technology instruments of war, and those who were merely computer fodder had to be protected against their knowledge. They could not be trusted. Patriotism, especially during the Vietnam era, was a waning motivation. Their memories had to be erased. But, he explained, mind control was not needed to make a killer. Professionals didn't usually need to be motivated. Most members of search and destroy or executive action, unquote, teams were already willing to kill men, women, or children if their superiors ordered it. I concluded that he meant a career killer didn't need to be debriefed by mind control. When I said that, he contradicted me. You want to bet, he said? They'd all kill, but they might not be able to keep the secret. It would depend entirely upon what activities they were involved in, whether the assignment was combat, mop-up, search and destroy, political assassination, or whatever. This debriefing is done in such a way, in many cases, as to cause actual memory damage. As things have gone along and progressed, the techniques have been smoothed out, but memory damage still occurs. In certain cases, memory recall is so critical that they bend over backwards to be damn sure that you can't remember. Many of the things that occur are not as pretty as you'd like the public to think, he said. So you've witnessed many atrocities of war, I asked. I don't call them atrocities, he countered. I call them military actions. There's a lot of conflict of interest there, the politicians against the military. The next section here, Bauer induces the assassin to talk about political assassinations in this country and also the distribution of power. And interestingly, he confirms that JFK, RFK, Martin Luther King were assassinated by lone nuts. He says that George Wallace, who was shot by Arthur Bremer, was the work of a true kook. This goes to show, I guess, that assassins are dealt with on a need-to-know basis, because certainly there's massive evidence indicating that George Wallace, who was removed from the 1972 presidential race by Arthur Bremer, was indeed removed for political reasons, and that Arthur Bremer was anything but a lone nut. This is material we've covered before, not only on One Step Beyond, but on Hard Rain as well. Then the patriotic assassin, as Bauer calls him, goes on to talk about how what he says basically the CIA is just a figurehead, and that it's the National Security Agency, the NSA, that runs the hit teams and who really is the heavy in this country, I guess you might say. Certainly that's his assertion here. Continuing here with Bauert's account. I let him rail a while about the evils of the government and then brought him back to my main point of interest. Okay, who killed JFK, RFK, King, and who is behind Bremer, I asked. He didn't remember who Bremer was, so I explained that he was the man who'd shot Wallace. Oh, yeah, he said. Bremer was just a kook. Wallace was shot by just a kook. But whoever got the Kennedys and King probably got a medal. We were set up to wipe Castro out. Kennedy interfered at the last minute. You want to take a guess at who killed him? Oswald was just a patsy. I fired the same kind of rifle Oswald was supposed to have used. You can't rapid fire that thing like he was supposed to have done. Now, who do you suppose killed Kennedy? Don't kid yourself. This country is controlled by the Pentagon. All the major decisions in this country are made by the military, from my observations on the clandestine side of things. The CIA is just a whipping boy. NSA, the National Security Agency, are the ones who have the hit teams. Look into their records. You won't find a thing. Look into their budget. You can't. For the life of you, you can't find any way they could spend the kind of money they've got on the number of people who were supposed to be on their payroll. Even if they had immense research and development programs, they just couldn't spend that kind of money. The CIA is just a figurehead. They are more worldwide, like the FBI is. They're accountants, lawyers, file clerks, schoolboys. They are information gatherers. They've pulled a lot of goddamn shenanigans. I'm not going to deny that. But as far as intelligence goes, the NSA is far, far superior to them. Far in advance in the black arts, unquote. The CIA gets blamed for what NSA does. NSA is far more vicious and far more accomplished in their operations. The American people are kept in ignorance about this. They should be, too. In other words, I responded, what you're saying is that the military is more dangerous to our democracy than the CIA or other intelligence groups. The CIA gathers information, but the military heads the show. Look at how many former military officers work for the CIA. Look at how many former high-ranking military officers work for the multinational corporations. Can't you figure it out? Well, next, the patriotic assassin goes on to say basically that there are about 18 or 20 people who run the whole United States and goes on to talk about many U.S. intelligence agents who continue to work for corporations, and primarily corporations, while at the same time working within our own government. Continuing here with Bauer's account. What are you suggesting, that there is an invisible coup d'etat which has occurred in the United States? I asked. Okay. There is a group of about 18 or 20 people running this country. They have not been elected. The elected people are only figureheads for these guys who have a lot more power than even the President of the United States. You mean that the president is powerless, I asked? Not exactly powerless. He has the power to make decisions on what is presented to him. The intelligence agencies tell him only what they want to tell him, however. They don't tell him any more than they have to or want to. You have to wonder at American stupidity. How much does it take to get people to wake up to what has happened? It's public knowledge that the CIA has falsified documents and given presidents fake intelligence reports so that he can only arrive at one conclusion, the conclusion that they want him to arrive at. The Pentagon Papers revealed that fact. What people don't know is that global corporations have their own version of the CIA. Interrupting here, this recently has become certainly much better known than it had been in the past. An excellent book on the subject that we've referred to in the past on this and other programs is called Spooks by Jim Hogan. And if any of you would like to get further information about that, you can ask me during the phone-in section of the show. Continuing here with the Patriotic Assassin's account. What people don't know is that the global corporations have their own version of the CIA. Where they don't interface with the CIA, they have their own organizations, all CIA trained. They also have double agents inside CIA and other intelligence organizations who are loyal to those corporations. I mean, where's the bread buttered? Would you rather take the government pensions, or would you rather work a little for the corporation on the side and get both government pensions and corporate benefits after you retire? Most men retire after 20 years, and they're only in their mid-40s. Then they go to work for the corporation they've been working for while they were in government service. They get both the pension and the corporate paycheck that way. Together with what the corporations do on their own, they have a worldwide espionage system far better than the CIA's. There is a network of what amounts to double agents. They do work for the government and may appear to be government agents, but they are first loyal to the corporations. They report to those corporations on the government and on what foreign governments might be planning, which would interfere with those corporations' foreign investments. These guys are strictly free enterprise agents. And the next section here, Bauert discusses with the Patriotic Assassin some of these agents, these free enterprise agents, as the assassin calls them. And apparently the assassin maintains that these agents spy on the U.S. government and that secrets get out all over the world this way. It's certainly interesting to speculate about what effect, if this is in fact the case, what effect this, what implications this has, I should say, for Ronald Reagan's sort of high-tech security pitch that is observed, basically is occupied so much news space, so much space in the newspapers recently. Continuing with Bauert's account. You call these guys contract agents, I wondered? Oh, no, no, no. Take, for example, we develop a new death ray. We've got all the security the government can think of on it. We've got the best security in the United States on it, which is tied for second place for the best security in the world. Tied for first place are the Russian and Chinese security systems. Now, even with all this security on a government contract, that death ray is up for grabs in every nation in the world. Any amount of military security can't keep it secret. What you're saying, I interrupted, is that American people are selling secrets wholesale to the highest bidder. That is to say, I assume if the highest bidder is an American company. And even if it's not, he said, usually it is another nation. I've dealt with weapons, and usually the nation that wants it most will pay the most for it. Once in a while, these companies, these government contractors, will find that someone has stolen one of their secrets and there'll be a big flap. But the big boys that are in the military are an entirely different ball of wax. The big guys get away with it. When one of these companies finds someone inside it that's selling secrets, they take him on a fishing trip, a boat ride, and get rid of him. It's quite common, he said. For example, if I was tied in with one of these companies where money is no object and they wanted me to get rid of you, I'd obtain a passport or a duplicate passport with your smiling face on it. After I'd obtained it, I'd put whoever's face on it I wanted. Then after we dumped you, that someone, unquote, whose face was on your passport would take a trip to Australia. Later, your friends or family would notice you were missing and people would begin to inquire as to your whereabouts. Eventually, they'd check with Australian customs who'd say, yes, this guy entered the country on such and such a date. By then, the guy who traveled over there on your passport would already have come back on his own. And as far as the best detective could tell you, you've gone to Australia, and you've never come back. Next, the assassin gets into the actual discussion of mind control, and he describes various techniques which are used for mind control. And interestingly enough, he takes up the whole question about whether or not mind control research has stopped. And the government has often maintained that, yes, they were doing research on mind control, but that it stopped. And what the assassin confirms here is that, yes, the research has stopped simply because no more research is needed. The techniques are all operational and have been for some time. Continuing here with the Patriotic Assassin. What do you know about the military or the intelligence agency's use of pain drug hypnosis, I asked. They used several different things. I've seen, actually seen, guys coming back with blanks only in certain places of their memory. Let's say that I know positively, not by hearsay, that it's done. You've seen it, I asked. You'll never get me to admit it, he grinned. Well, how is it done, I asked. They use hypnosis and hypnotic drugs. They also use electronic manipulation of the brain. They use ultrasonics, which will boil the brain. When they use hypnosis, they'll at the same time be using a set of earphones which repeat, "You do not know this or that," over and over. They turn on the sonics at the same time, and the electrical patterns which give you memory are scrambled. You can't hear the ultrasonics, and you can't feel it, unless they leave it on. Then it boils your gray matter. Unless the assassin had done the same research I had, he could only have known this through first-hand experience. The CIA documents released in 1976 revealed that ultrasonic research was undertaken for a period of more than 20 years. But the documents said that the research had stopped, so I asked him about that. Yeah, the research has stopped. They've gone operational. It ain't research anymore. They know how to do it, he said. Do you mean that it is your opinion that it hasn't stopped? Or do you mean that you know it hasn't stopped, I asked. I mean I know it hasn't stopped, he said. For example, suppose that a dictator in some South American country is setting up real problems and we try to kick him out. We call in some of my former group and say, look, the bastard has got to have a fatal accident and it's got to look good, like he fell on a bar of soap and broke his neck in the bathtub or something. So we go down there and get the job done. But it could be quite embarrassing if any of the guys were cross-examined about where they'd been and what they'd done. So the guys who were in on the job suddenly have a cold or something, and they are put in a hospital for maybe just a routine checkup. They come out of the hospital in about 15 days. They're alive, they're well, they're healthy, and they're happy too. Lots of luck if you question them. They don't remember anything. Next, the assassin goes on to talk about how mind control is also used to improve the memory of couriers. He continues here. That's one way it's used. The other way is to use it to improve memory, say with couriers. You want a secret message carried outside the chain of command. There's no need to have it carried by a person if it's a legal message, because the military's got 1,000 ways of sending messages which are unbreakably secret. But if it's outside the chain of command, as so many things are these days, if it's an illegal message, and our Constitution doesn't permit us to do much that is legal, then you have a hypno-programmed guy carry the message. You improve his memory so that he can carry an entire coded book of what appears to be gibberish. And when he's got it down, you give him amnesia and seal off that message by a post-hypnotic code word and whammo. You've got a real good secret courier because he can be tortured to death, but he can't remember. Unless the proper cue is uttered. Then if the courier is going to operate against the enemy, who might have the techniques of hypnosis down, you give him several layers of post-hypnotic command. In the first layer, he'll confess a false message. In the second layer, he'll confess another different false message. Finally, maybe on the fourth or fifth layer is the real message. Now, our guy who was supposed to get the message knows that the first three cues say are fake. And he gives the fourth cue, and out comes the correct message. If the courier was in enemy hands, he could be there for years before anybody will figure out where he was in all those layers. Each identity will probably be that of a real cutout, unquote, a person enough like him so that the enemy will think that they've got the real guy. Many of the men in my unit were given assignments after which they were so persuaded, unquote, that they didn't remember anything. I mean to say they'd gone in believing that the only thing in life that meant anything to them was completing the assignment, to get it done. And when they got it done, and when they got done with it, they couldn't remember anything about it. Could those guys have been that way without hypnosis, I asked? Well, they could have believed that their mission in life was that particular assignment. They usually had no family affiliations, no friends, nothing but their careers. But I don't think they'd have forgotten about those kind of assignments. Not without a little help, let's say. What was the conditioning that these guys had? Was it drugs, hypnosis, or something else, I wanted to know? Hypnosis, electrotherapy, programming them by tapes, by voiceover earphones, awake or in trance or asleep, by a number of methods. How widespread was this mind control, I asked. Well, that's something I can't really answer. I know of several different groups upon whom it was used. I know that it was used in some of the hairier areas of Korea and Vietnam, and it was started in World War II, but it's been refined far more since then. How much of it was used, I don't know. I know of several groups that I was affiliated with that had it used on them. Would you say this kind of thing did not exist before World War II, I asked? Oh, it did, but it was not in such a sophisticated form. It's as old as man, but now it's refined to an art. Before, it was torture and psychological pressure. That can accomplish a lot. We've been trained to use it in primitive field situations. But now it's done with the idea that the mind can be put under complete control. Just like they used to use rubber hoses at the police stations. They don't do that anymore. Well, rubber hoses still work, but they don't work as well as some of the other things which the police now have. The next section here, the patriotic assassin maintains that the police, in fact, have mind control. And he goes on to describe the kind of work he was doing for the military. And apparently one of the things he was doing in the military was engaged in assassinating people developing technologies that could potentially be threatening to the United States, even if these were countries friendly to the United States. So he goes on here. Are you saying that the police use mind control, I asked? At the highest levels, yes. The FBI certainly uses it, and they, of course, give a lot of help to the local police. There are certain areas of the brain which control your inhibitions. When they control those centers, then the subject will go on with his assignment regardless. I've seen men whose mother could be sitting there having coffee, and if they'd been instructed to kill her, they'd walk right in and shoot her, and it wouldn't even upset their appetites for supper. They were conditioned to do it in such a way that they have no guilt. They wouldn't have guilt, because after they were through, they wouldn't even remember it. Let me tell you something. The cheapest commodity in the world, is human beings. Most assassins don't need to be programmed to kill. They're loyal to command. They're conditioned, first by the circumstances of their own early life, then by a little loyalty training, unquote. The command is their only justification for living. It is also their only protection once they're into it. When I came out of the service and went to work for the government, I had a colonel assigned to me as a bodyguard. When he retired, I hired him, he said, pointing to his bodyguard. He's still with me, and that's why we have these. He pointed to the .357 Magnum strapped to his side in plain sight. Who are you worried about? The Russians? The Chinese? Well, I'll tell you. You can damn near put a pin in the map anywhere you want. I got into military security before the Second World War. I was just a kid. Over the years, I was assigned to 32 different countries, so you can draw your own conclusion. But what you've been talking about is a political action, not a military one. How then, as a military security man, did you get involved in political actions? Well, suppose there were countries that were doing technological research on things which could be injurious to the welfare of the United States. I'd be one of the guys assigned to destroy those scientists who were involved in the research. That was with friendly and unfriendly governments. So naturally, if they found out that I was in on it, even now, they'd come after me. In other cases, I was involved in knocking off some dictators. Then we changed the people's voting ideas when they had to elect someone. I return to the main thread of our conversation. Okay, now, since we have this mind control technology, what is to keep the guys in the cryptocracy or the military, as you maintain, from programming presidents as soon as they take office or immediately after they get elected? I've always wondered about Nixon, he mused. He was very pro-military. He gave them just about everything they wanted in the world. But he wanted to create a monarchy with himself as king, and slowly but surely he tried to take over the military and the CIA through subordinate officers who were loyal to him only. All you hear about are left-wing conspiracies to overthrow our government. You never hear about right-wing conspiracies. Next, the patriotic assassin here goes on to say basically that the country, the United States, that is, has had a right-wing coup. That is to say, the 18 or 20 people who run the country that he alluded to earlier have, in fact, taken over the whole country. And it's interesting. He basically, he hints rather directly that there has been a right-wing coup in this country. Continuing here with Barrett's account. All you hear about are left-wing conspiracies to overthrow our government. You never hear about right-wing conspiracies. Well, some of these right-wing groups are far more dangerous than the left-wing. The left-wing's mostly kids with dreams. The right-wing is usually retired military. They're hard, they're trained, they've got arms. But if the right-wing took over right now, that would be just a military dictatorship. And the military would find that its best plans were not upset at all. I'm saying if a dictatorship took over. Hell, we've got one right now, but it ain't overt. It's subtle. You mean those 20 men you were talking about, I asked? Yeah. If the people of this country actually knew that, they would say no the next time they were asked to go to Vietnam. We need the people behind us to fight a war, and if they knew the true facts, who's running things, there wouldn't be the following we'd need to defend the country. That fact alone keeps the sham of politics and free elections, unquote, going. If that is the case, then the results would be different? Yes. If people knew they had a dictatorship. Have you ever heard of a factory slowdown, a strike? Well, Russia has run up against the problem, and so have we in supporting the foreign dictators we support. The American people, like most people, have to feel that they have some right, that they're the good guys, unquote. This is the reason we have never lost a war and have never won a peace. You've got to maintain the sham of freedom no matter what. It wouldn't make any difference what party is in charge or whether it was the elected government or what you call the cryptocracy running it. From an operational sense, the government would operate as it presently is. From the point of view of people paying taxes and defending their country, well, we found in Latin America that people won't fight if they think they have a dictator who is just as bad as the enemy who is attacking. That's probably why it would be fairly easy to take over the Soviet Union short of nuclear war. The Soviets could probably be convinced by psychological warfare that their government is certainly a lot more evil than ours, and if we went to war with them, we would eventually win. That is, until the H-bomb started to fall, then nobody'd be the winner. Changing the subject, I asked, what area of the military were you in? I don't think I ought to answer that. Let's say there was a group which first sought to solve problems politically. If that didn't work, then there was another group which went in and tried to buy solutions. If that failed, then my group was sent in to be damn sure things were accomplished the way we wanted them to be. So you were operational and not research at all, I asked. No, I had been in the lab for a long time. The knowledge I developed was very valuable in an operational sense. I was put into the field because of this knowledge. You're talking about pretty sophisticated equipment, not commando stuff. Right. For example, I won't say the name of the country, but it was a South American country. We had a leader that we had supported there who suddenly got the idea that he was going to go off on his own. They tried to reason, negotiate, and buy off his affections. When all that failed, my team was sent in to correct the situation. We went in very quietly and left very noisily. We went in as tourists, but the important material we brought in was the turning point. Let's say we couldn't reason with the man anymore. We were there about 6 days and the problem disappeared. Not many bodies, just the important ones. The last section here, the patriotic assassin goes on to describe several specific political actions that he was involved in. Apparently, also a blown assassination attempt against a well-known political figure who, according to Bauert, was later removed by non-lethal means. In other words, he was destroyed politically by some means that didn't kill him. And interestingly enough, Bauert also mentions that he put the tape recording of the patriotic assassin's remarks through a psychological stress evaluator and found the account to be valid in all respects. And the final thing in this interview that I'm reading here is basically some speculation. The book was written very early in the Carter administration, but some speculation that if President Carter continued on the sort of idealistic tack that he appeared to be on at one point, that he would be assassinated. The assassin says that he would definitely be killed. Interestingly enough, though, the assassin also points out that the guy was a career naval man with top security clearance, and he says don't be too surprised if the guy turns out to be in the military's camp. And for a book written in 1978, I think you have to say that was pretty prophetic. Last section of the interview with the patriotic assassin reads as follows. The assassin was very specific, telling about some of the jobs he'd accomplished. Several included actions taken against a well-known political figure. That, the assassin said, was the only assassination he'd ever blown, unquote. His rifle malfunctioned at the critical moment when he had his target in the crosshairs of his sight. I cannot say that I had originally believed the assassin's claims, but after running the psychological stress evaluator on all the critical portions of his interview and finding no areas which unexpectedly or inexplicably produced stress, I believed that the assassin was telling the truth. The newspaper office he had mentioned was bombed when he said it was, but he could have gained knowledge of that from newspaper reports. The target of his unsuccessful hit was subsequently taken care of, unquote, in another way which did not cost him his life. The assassin concluded the interview with a chilling prophecy. Jimmy Carter was then a candidate for the presidency. I'll tell you something right now, the assassin said. You've got a man running for office that is expressing the same goddamn philosophy John Kennedy had. Now, he could be saying this stuff just to get elected. Matter of fact, if you look into his background, you find that he was a good naval officer. He had top security clearance. He was trained by Admiral Rickover, who, he said, had a strong influence on his life. Taking this into consideration, you can assume that he's a loyal member of the old boy net, so he probably will make a good figurehead president for those in power. But if he ain't an old boy, and if he does believe all those things he's been telling the voters, if he tries to implement those reforms he's talking about, well, it's not a question of whether he's going to be snuffed. It's only a question of when or where. I would add that on May 5th, 1979, Jimmy Carter escaped on a reputedly aborted assassination attempt in which some riflemen supposedly who'd come up from Mexico apparently were represented by a fellow whose name was Ray Lee Harvey. That's Ray as in James Earl Ray and Lee Harvey as in Lee Harvey Oswald. And President Carter was not killed, of course. Interestingly enough, shortly after that, he had the big policy conference at which basically his whole foreign policy swung dramatically to the right. So one can only speculate about just what was really the case with James Earl Carter. Anyway, that winds up the first portion of the show, the information presentation section.